I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Are you PNLP? This is the Premier Non-League Podcast Summer Specials.
So it's been a few months, Chris. We're back for the Premier. Well, months, I'd say. It's probably been a month and a half, but it feels like months, doesn't it, when you have no football?
It's a long time.
But it is a long time. But Chris and I thought we'd bring you a little summer special tonight. We did a successful series last year with summer specials, and we thought we will have the perfect opportunity to do one with one of the co-chairmen of Ashton United, Jonathan Sayer, whose book comes out on the 10th of August called Nowhere to Run, The Ridiculous Life of a Semi-Professional Football Club Chairman. Jonathan's joining us all the way from New York right now. So, Chris, I think that's probably one of the most glamorous locations we've ever had on the Premier Non-League podcast, would you say?
I would say so.
I mean, we have me flying around the world and in hotel rooms sometimes, just a random parts world. But, I mean, to have one of our guests coming in from New York, it's pretty impressive. We're going places, Chris, aren't we?
I'm in the least glamorous place you could imagine, though. I'm in, like, a store unit in a theatre. Because it's the only place where I could find good Wi-Fi. Because I've been living out here doing a show, but I've been kicked out of my apartment now. So I'm literally in a storage
cupboard. You're literally living in the storage cupboard. Jonathan, welcome to the Premier Non-League podcast. Thank you for joining us. And, you know, thank you for sending your book. As I said to you, like, I read it on my recent holiday. But it's a fantastic read. Tell us a little bit about yourself for listeners that don't know. Just, you know, start about yourself. Why you're out in New York? You said you're in a theatre. And what you're involved in, really?
Yeah, of course. So outside of non-league football, I work as an actor and a writer, predominantly in comedy. So I'm part of a company called Mischief. So we do shows, things that people might have heard of are The Play That Goes Wrong, comedy about a bank robbery, and the Goes Wrong show that was on the BBC for a couple of seasons. So we make that work, and we're out at the moment in New York doing Peter Pan Goes Wrong. So we're here in New York, and then we head out to LA. So that's what I do as a day job. But then outside of that, I have a kind of weird second life, which is I'm the co-chairman of Ashton United.
And you have to emphasise co-chairman, because reading the book, I think quite a lot of times you were sort of not recognised as that, were you?
Well, I did. So it's a role that I share with my dad. And it's been a really nice... So we're both from the area. And my granddad, his dad, played for Ashton. He was the captain for... God, he was the captain for like a decade, I think. And I've always gone to watch the club and just got more and more involved about 4 years ago. And then, yeah, my dad and myself have ended up as the co-chairman. But I would say that if you imagine a football chairman in your head, probably like my dad is that image, you know, like he's got his kind of flat cap and like he's a bigger kind of broad-shouldered guy who, you know, a kind of no-nonsense kind of guy. And then I'm possibly not your stereotypical non-league chairman. But it's been really, really fun. Like, it's been a great experience to do something with him.
Well, I don't think you can be completely honest that it's not always been fun, though, has it? Because, you know, reading the book, there's been plenty of ups and downs and times where you've doubted your sort of, why have I done this? I mean, Chris, we've said, like, I think anyone that invests into a football club has to be a slightly... crazy in the nicest possible way, especially at non-league level, because you got, you know, the great thing about the book, as we said off air, is it's so relatable. As listeners to the podcast know, Chris is involved quite heavily at South Shields, especially with the media side of things, myself at Worthing, and I'm on the supports committee. Frustrations as well, you get putting yourself in that hot seat.
No, it's, I mean, like, well, yeah, so oh gosh, where to start, because it is such a long story. So the book is a kind of mixture, I would say, first and foremost, with kind of stuff that's actually happened, and then the stuff that's exaggerated a little bit for comic effect. But the stuff that is particularly true are really focuses on the mistakes that I've made. And I suppose the bigger, the thing that, so when I got involved, I think probably the mistake I made was I thought it would be a lot easier than it is. I kind of imagined, you know, oh, it'll be great. Like, you know, I'll put a little bit of money in that and I'll be able to come back home at the weekends and I'll watch the team win and it'll just be lovely. And, you know, me and my dad will do this thing together. And it's incredibly stressful. It's incredibly stressful. One, because I'm sure you two know this, but there's never quite enough people, right? Because a football club, even a small football club, is a massive endeavor. Like, it takes all the time that you have. It could be a full-time job in itself. You know, you've got an army of volunteers, but they've all got jobs as well. So you're constantly tired. Like, there's obviously I think the thing that I didn't realize as well is you're always in kind of firefighter mode because, like, you want to do all this kind of planning for the future. But, you know, ultimately, particularly in the last few years, right, you know, you've had like COVID, players isolating, all that kind of stuff. But then, you know, like freak weather conditions, you've got the pitch being waterlogged, like desperately trying to get matches on, desperately trying to solve different problems. So it's definitely been like, it's definitely been an emotional roller coaster. I'd say as well, like, a thing that I didn't expect was, and this is kind of in the book, like, I remember being so excited all the way through my first pre-season, just being like, this is going to be brilliant. I'm going to love this. And like, the friendlies are just kind of, you know, they're nice events, aren't they? It felt very similar to being just it felt very similar to just going down and watching the team. And it was just an enjoyable experience. And then as soon as the competitive season started, I remember about 15 minutes into it, just being like, oh my God, I hate this. I hate it. Like, I feel totally powerless. Like, you're totally powerless, but you feel a total sense of responsibility is my kind of take on it. And yeah, I've really tried to talk about that in the book. I've tried to talk about, you know, how I found it emotionally. I've tried to really, like, so a lot of the stuff I write outside of, a lot of the stuff I write in my day job is about shortcomings and about mistakes that you make and all that kind of stuff. So I've really tried to focus on that. And I think I've tried to be particularly honest or maybe even a bit cruel when it comes to myself and the things that I could have done better.
I do think in the book you are quite hard on yourself sometimes. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah. No, I was going to say something similar. Yeah.
No, yes, I think that without turning this into kind of a therapy podcast. Yeah, no, I am maybe a bit hard on myself.
Trust me, if they need therapy podcasts, I think they need to therapy me, don't they, Chris? That you'd always say.
You just like, yes, you feel so much. You guys will know this as well, because like, you know everyone in the ground, right? So you know how much it means to everyone. I think when you know, particularly on like a match where maybe it's been quite difficult to get the game on, and you know how many hours have been put into keeping the pitch in good order and, you know, getting it ready, you want it so much, not just for yourself, but for everyone. And I think that can lead you to being a bit hard on yourself.
I know you showed pure frustration when your dad had had one or too many beers and started over-promising a lot of stuff to the fans. Now, has that ever come back to bite you in the bum? And like, you sort of said you were so annoyed after. The other thing pops like, but what was your like pure reaction towards your dad after that? Because you must have been so annoyed, especially you'd gone in there with the game plan.
Well, I think that like a real difference between us both is that I overthink a lot of stuff. So with things like that, like I'm like really, like, and as well because I'm in a media facing job, so I'm really used to doing interviews, but also like sticking to a message and being like, these are the things that I want to get across when we're having this chat, and you know, and I'm going to really focus on them. Whereas my dad will just say, it's probably more authentic. That's the thing that I touch on as well. That I always, again, probably in my own head, but I always feel that I always like he comes across probably in stuff like that a lot more authentic than I do, because I'm probably more concerned about not saying the, you know, the wrong thing or trying to manage the situation. And he just kind of says, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. And I think the end of that chapter is, from what I would say that bit is a slightly exaggerated chapter of the book where like I kind of always have a concern about being the kind of junior partner in the relationship. And I think it was me that in the end was like, oh, we're going to do these things and we're going to do that. And oh, I can't wait for us to achieve promotion. And I can't wait for us to have all these different things running immediately. And then you find out that the reality of it is just really, really difficult. And you find as well, like, when you watch an interview with a football manager or someone talking about the match, and you know they won't commit to anything. They say we're taking one game at a time, and you've got all these dreadful football cliches that make stuff, you know, a little dreary sometimes. And actually, you kind of get why they say it. Like, fine margins used to be a thing that drove me mad, and now I can't tell you how much I understand it. You go home being like, oh, but if that. That tiny little moment, if that had, you know, if we hadn't hit the post there in 6 minutes in and we'd have scored, it would have been totally different. So, yeah, but no, I definitely think that it goes back to the fact that at the very beginning, I kind of thought this will be a lot easier than it ended up being.
Because it was obviously not too long after we had COVID. Now, I'm always curious, John, because of the saturation of football clubs in and around the greater Manchester, Lancashire area, how you guys kind of survive, because there's such a plethora of clubs and you're all trying to, there's only so many pieces of pie and you're trying to get the crumbs from these slices of pie. So you're trying to grow a club in an area where everybody else is trying to grow their club, and it's so saturated. It just felt like for us, we were never off the M62 in the last 3 years. You know, we just kept crossing the M62. Mm. To be blunt, how do you do it? How do you survive in an area like that where there are so many clubs trying to feed from the same trough?
Gosh, I mean, it's a really good question. I think that we're lucky in that it is a, the Northwest is a big football region, right? So that there are enough people to come and see matches. But no, it is tough. I'd say that, like, one thing that I'm really envious of whenever we head up to the Northeast is I think that distance between the clubs is just a little bit further apart.
It is.
And so it means you have bigger gates than us. I think we went to, is it Ashington?
Yes.
We went there in the FA Cup last year and got absolutely hammered. one of the worst nights, a really bad night that. But again, I remember just like, you know, it's that club, and then around the area, there's not that much, so it just tends to be that there are more people there, and we do all have to be a little bit more competitive. It's really interesting because I'd say that the general relationship between all the clubs is pretty warm, pretty respectful. But yeah, no, it's a really, really tricky thing. I think, like, we're all in different leagues, which maybe helps a little bit. But no, there is an element of competition, and there is an element of, you know, who can, you kind of always having to sell yourself, and you kind of feel like you're always on audition. I think that it's really important as well. You kind of have people who are like the diehard supporters of those clubs. And then you probably have people who almost make their decision at the start of the season based on who's, you know, who's doing the best, who's playing the most entertaining football. So, and the thing that we've always struggled with since I've come in is really hitting the ground running. Like, we've had like really good patches, but it usually has come after a bit of a tough opening month or two. And then maybe you're not the most appealing out of the clubs.
Yeah, you've played well against South Shields on numerous occasions. You've been kind of a bit of a bogey club for Shields.
So you must love interviewing him right now, Chris, then, yeah?
This is great.
Our general problem, I would say, I'm really optimistic that this season, quite a lot of lessons have been learnt and it's going to be really different. But generally speaking, I've always been, when we're playing South Shields, I'm really confident because... Mm. We just seem to show up to really big matches, and we've struggled more. Previous experience has been if we're playing a team that wants to play football, then we tend to do quite well. But then if we're playing a team, I think because we've tended to be a counter-punching team, but then when we've had another team that's also happy to sit back a little bit, then it's been a real struggle. But I think we've had a bit of a manager change, and I think we've had a bit of a philosophy change as well. So I'm curious to see how this season will go, because I think we are going to be more naturally on the front foot. Yeah. Hopefully we're going to be a team that's trying to dominate the opposition rather than kind of keeping it tight for the first 20 minutes and, you know, and looking for a break.
Because your manager is Steve Cunningham, yeah?
Steve Cunningham, yeah, who went up with Buxton a few years ago as well. Like, it is a very different stuff, because... Mike Clegg was our manager before, who I've got nothing but kind of high praise for. But I think there's a real difference in the style of football that both of them want to play.
Yeah. Now, Steve's quite popular among a lot of South Shields fans, actually, from his days at Colne. He's a very popular figure. He's on good terms with a lot of Shields fans. And a lot of Shields fans will wish you guys well. I'm not just saying that because we're in a meeting tonight, but generally, I think there'll be Shields supporters who will be looking out for you because Steve is popular. So his philosophy has always been about football, so that should be good.
Yeah, like it's very much about keeping the ball on the deck. Like we've gone through this whole thing in the closed season. We've totally done the pitch again, which I think is the first time in decades it's been totally ripped up. It's been totally reseeded, totally relaid, all with the intention of being able to get the ball on the floor and play some proper football. He kind of came in towards the back end of last season, and it was really hard to play football because just balls just sticking to the grass all the time and it's bobbly. And it's no one's fault because I'd say that we've got a brilliant grounds team, but just it was more like... Like it was the issue was like deep set. It wasn't something that could just be kind of massaged away with a roller. Like it needed to be all brought up and put back down. So it's going to be a good season. And like I've been out in the States so much that I've met with Steve a couple of times and we chat on the phone. But like whenever I've gone to the ground, he's got a lovely way with people as well. Like kind of I think he actually talked about his time in Colne and how Ashton feels kind of similar in the sense that it's a real community club. Like, almost everyone who's watching is in some way a volunteer or part of doing something at the club. So I think it feels like we're really all moving as one this season. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Chris, all you're going to have to worry about now, you don't have to worry about Manchester, Greater Manchester area. You have to worry about getting down to Hertfordshire on a Saturday now, don't you? Or a Tuesday night.
Bishop Stortford.
Ridiculous. Gloucester. John, one of the things you mentioned just now and about relaying the pitch for this summer, and you mentioned in the book about the pitch previously and the additional costs, you know, like to water the pitch and like, you know, where's the money going to come from? I got the impression that, to put it politely, you were kind of naive about the running costs of a football club because it seemed to take you by surprise, everything. Were you kind of undersold it by the previous owner? Because that's the sort of impression I kind of got.
I think that it's less about being undersold. I think it's more just, this is a totally new world to me. So there's costs that I just didn't, just like you said, I think a bit of naivety. Like, I just didn't think, oh, well, there's that and there's that and there's that. I just kind of thought, well, there's the wages. I kind of imagined, or most of that will be covered, though, by the gate receipts and by the bar. But like you said, there's just loads and loads of different costs. There's the playing staff, the management staff, but then there's just the costs that come with essentially running a bar, right? That's what the social club or the clubhouse or whatever different clubs call it, but really you're just running a sports bar. There's all the different kind of administration fees, like you said, there's the keeping the pitch in good nick, there's the ground grading. It just kind of goes on and on and on, really. And it can feel just totally, totally endless. And to go back to your question about the locality of the club, like it means that actually an extra 20 people come in on a match day, that's actually really, really important. That's a real game changer for a lot of clubs. I think there's definitely, it's definitely fair to say.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You've relayed the pitch. What were you adding up the cost of putting a 3G pitch in? Like, what was the decision that you made to reseed it? Like, so obviously we know from our, well, I know Chris, you've got a real glass pitch at Shields. Worthing, we've got a 3G pitch. It makes a lot of money for the club as well. Was there any considerations you made to think, you know, do we or don't we? Or is it because the goal eventually is to get up to professional football and you don't want that cost of relaying a grass pitch then?
No, so with the pitch, it kind of goes back to the question about overpromising, because I definitely remember I said, oh, we're going to have a 3G pitch within the next 2 years. And it's just very complicated. It's just quite difficult to do. There's a lot of costs that you have to meet up front. I think we'd still really like to do it, because I think that so many clubs, I think the future of them has to be about being absolutely central to the community. And that not just being like a couple of buzzwords, like it really needs to be, it's a club for everyone. And that means little boys, little girls getting on the pitch during the weeks. That means having numerous teams that can play. That means having proper, that means having like a fully properly funded women's setup at the club as well. But all of that, you really need the 3G pitch, because otherwise you're asking volunteers to do even more, keep the pitch ready. And like you said, you can hire it out, you can have walking football, and all of a sudden the club, it changes, right? It becomes this kind of hub of activity where you've got people who are there all the time. They're not only there because there's a match on a Saturday or a Tuesday. There's a reason to be there. You can get your training sessions there. So I do think that's a really smart move for a lot of clubs. It makes a lot of sense to me. But there's a huge amount of cost at the beginning. You've got to like take up all the turf. You've got to remove all the earth, wherever that goes. You've got to, like a thing that we don't have is that it's a tremendous amount of parking. So we've got to kind of look at how that works. There's just quite a lot of nuance that comes with doing it. And I think that every year we've kind of said, well, let's not make a huge commitment to the pitch, because we're going to try and do G. And I think that this time we just thought, well, we should do something, because you lose so many games, not like in regard to winning and losses. You just can't put matches on. And that just becomes really problematic, because of the income thing, but also like for the team itself, like you lose momentum. Like we had a whole thing where we had a really fantastic result. We were raring to go. This was just after Steve had come in. We had like two wins on the bounce. There was a real like, oh, this is going to be great. And then we didn't play for 3.5 weeks, 4 weeks, because it was frozen. It was waterlogged. It was just all these different things. I think there's a bit in the book that's actually like, so again, like I said, like the book is kind of, it's not totally, you can't take it all totally on face value. Because another thing I've done is I've picked moments from other seasons and folded them into that first season. So there's a bit about trying to get the match on. And that was actually this season where, like, you know, we had all kinds of weird and wonderful experiments of how we could thaw the pitch. So we had I was away, but there was a WhatsApp group and it sent this picture. And as soon as the picture came through on the WhatsApp, it made my blood run cold. And it was like a big tarpaulin. And then it was like a load of propane heaters. And someone had decided to get all the propane heaters and then cover it in tarpaulin to like keep the heat inside. And the tarpaulin was plastic. And apparently it started. And then my uncle said, I'm going to check that it's working. And then he got under the tarpaulin and apparently like very, very, very nearly set himself on fire. So
what WhatsApp group was that though? Because I know you had about 50 million WhatsApp groups.
Oh, yeah, there's so many WhatsApp groups. I don't know if you could hear the sound of them binging and bonging away just then. But there's so many different. Well, it's my fault as well. This is definitely explored in the book. I decompartmentalized the club. So I was like, well, this group is for player registration. This is for ad boards and sponsorship. This is for finding a training facility. Loads of conversations that I didn't even need to be in. But the really funny thing is, again, you'll know this from your clubs, but there's only so many people that are in those groups anyway. So we just had loads of different groups with different combinations of people, mostly the same, just as, it's been a whole thing. And there seems to be even more being set up every day.
Every day. One thing that made me laugh is that when we talk about costs, is that you were talking about the coaches previously before you. It was sponsored, do you think, by a local deck chair company? And that seemed to disappear.
I must say that. So at the beginning of the book, there's a disclaimer that says some of this is the God's truth as much as I can remember.
Oh, is this one of the tidbits? This is
exaggerated. And there are some moments of fiction just to make the readers laugh. And the deck chair company that folded was just a joke that I like the sound of. The other thing that's in this book is there's you kind of become a kind of honorary groundhopper working in non-league.
Yeah.
And some of it is stories from other clubs that people have told me off the record or said, oh, this happened at our club. And I've tried to kind of fold them in as well. So there's lots of fun non-league stories all the way through.
But that's the brilliant thing about the book, because as we said at the beginning, it's so relatable to experiences we've had, because it's so completely different from supporting a professional club or even being involved in a professional club. And that's why this is what formed this podcast that you're on now. This is why, you know, we found a love for, you know, non-league football. And it's just so nice to see it written down.
But the irony is, though, you mentioned there that, we're not in professional football yet. Most of the volunteers are expected to be professional. For instance, if whoever's in charge of your registration makes a slight error, you can be docked points, or if you don't get your social media out on the YouTube or wherever it has to be on time, you can be fined. So you're asking volunteers to do the work of professionals, which adds to the pressure.
I don't quite know what the solution is to that, because I get that obviously there has to be rules and there has to be a shape that everyone has to fit in. But yeah, I totally agree with that. You've got people being asked, and I think the more, because we've definitely been on the rough end of kind of errors with player registration and stuff, and it's heartbreaking because you've got people who are putting in, they're literally in the club like at midnight trying to do all the paperwork, and like things are becoming increasingly digitized. And it's really, really tricky. The same with you've got to have your social media like this, and you've got to have these kind of things. And you've not always got the people who've got the skill set to necessarily do all that. So it's a really tricky one. It's a really, really tricky one. There's a part in the book that is totally true, which was that we kept being done for having the wrong training bibs on.
I read that.
We got a 350 quid fine. And they had all this, the league had all these photos, all this evidence. And everyone was like, well, how are they getting this evidence? And people thought, well, is it a supporter, or is it like a kind of supporter from another club, one of our local rivals who's coming in and like shopping us up to the league? Who's doing this? And then then one day I realized it was me. I'd been going around the ground taking photos and like putting them on my Twitter, being like, don't we look great? Matches ready. And then I'd been atting the league in like celebration. And I realized that I'd been reporting us for like 3 months to the league. So the fine was my fault.
Well, that was a bit snaky of the league, but we know you just need to listen back to some of our podcasts of our opinions of the football leagues we participate in and probably get it taken off the air for slander. But talking about kit, John, one part that did make me laugh was when, was it after your first season in charge, you ordered about 50 million different kits because two or three different people were putting the orders in where the communication broken down.
Yeah, I think that if it was a professional club, the official line would be there was a miscommunication. I ordered the kit. My dad ordered the kit. And someone else ordered the kit. So we just had we had this absolute surplus of kit. We then found out that we had a lot of kit from last season, and that kit was probably fine. And then we got a grant through. Which was great. Our vice chairman, Steve, runs the charity side of the club. And we got a grant through. But the caveat of the grant was that the money could only be used on kit and kind of track suits and stuff. So, there was a season where we had so many different kits and just nowhere near enough storage either. So you'd open a door and shirts would cascade everywhere. We were constantly trying to sell them and move them around.
You're still wearing them to this day.
I wear three Ashton United jerseys to every match now, just to get the wear.
So are you genuinely upbeat about your chances in the forthcoming season, Jonathan?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I hope the message of the book is, like you said, I'm not afraid to kind of be a bit harsh on myself. And I'm also not afraid to just kind of put my vulnerabilities or my frailties kind of out there. I kind of feel like that's a bit of my day job kind of bleeds into that. But I also hope that it's kind of an optimistic book, because I think ultimately it's about how amazing these clubs are all over the country that are kind of held together by like 20 or 30 people giving up all their time, sometimes giving up a lot of their money, but just giving in some ways giving up a lot to make the club work. And I think that this season we've all just arrived on a few really useful conclusions. We also had this problem that the first season, right? You'll know this as a South Shields fan more than anyone. The season was null and voided, and it meant that maybe, like, if you'd had your fine margins again, but if you have your first season and then you can stop and you can reflect and say, well, this worked, this didn't work, this is an area that actually I don't need to be involved in and I can step away from. And we kind of didn't have that, you know. The first 3 years were just one very long season, and the lessons that you draw from that season are quite weird lessons anyway, because it was such an unusual, you know, experience, because you were just trying to keep everything afloat. And, you know, the matches you were just trying to get, if you got them on, that was a bit of an achievement, let alone whether you won or lost, or, you know, you're just, if it happened and you managed to do all the kind of different rules that you had to do and you're on top of all the different things that we were supposed to be doing. I feel like we've only just had that moment of there's a season done under fairly regular conditions. And we can work out what's worked and what's not worked. So I am really optimistic about this season.
Good. You finished 14th last season, wasn't it? I think. Were you a little bit disappointed with that?
We kind of started pretty well. We started pretty well. Not like amazingly, but we started pretty well. And then we had a real down patch of like a month and a half where we just forgot how to score. And we had the thing that you were mentioning about we had to forfeit some points, and so we had a really rough October through to November. So we kind of went from being really in the playoff contention to being very kind of mid table, and then after that we changed the manager and Steve did great, but we had like lots of matches postponed, and the same as so many clubs. So it's not a case of making excuses. It's hard, isn't it, to know where the line is between evaluating what happened so you can learn from it and just feeling like you're making a load of excuses. But it was just a really, really up and down season. We tended to do very, very good against the really good teams. And then the teams that were kind of struggling more, we tended to struggle with a little bit. So it was just a bit of a hot and cold season, and it kind of petered out. But I'm really hopeful that this season will kind of, we've got more of an identity to us, and I think there's a real sense of excitement. Like you can just feel the momentum in a way that I've not been able to feel it before. Like it feels like something's happening. I can even feel that, you know, being in another country at the moment. Like there's just a sense of, it feels like things are fitting together a lot more. Maybe it's because I disappeared. Maybe I buggered off. My dad's there, and actually he's just running properly. That might be what's happened.
we'll definitely be keeping an eye to how you're doing this season as a friend of the podcast, which is great. What I wanted to end on before we wrap it up was one of the things that actually made me belly laugh. I'm sure Chris, you could agree. Do you want to talk to me about Bashford United and Bashley FC?
Yeah, I went to the wrong ground.
For people that aren't maybe from the UK or geographically knowledgeable of the UK, what was the worst thing about that?
Well, we're in the Northern Premier League, and I don't do geography, so I just put the words into the sat nav. Off I went, just mindlessly driving, and I went to the south of the country for a Northern Premier League match. I was like literally on the coast.
Yeah, I mean, Chris could probably I can appreciate Chris's season doing that, because he's got, as we said, he's got to go down for Hertfordshire to go and watch Shield. So we could get away with that. But in the Northern Premier League, I mean, come on. Can we blame you for jet lag? Was it jet lag?
No, just stupidity is the only reason for it. Just utter stupidity. No one knows this either. Like I've to this day, I've been too embarrassed to admit it. So I just text everyone, be like, "Oh, my car's broken down."
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Nightmare. And then we go. You've now revealed it in a book that's going to hopefully be read by millions of people around the world. So you know, I think there should be a T-shirt or a flag made right by the fans, because certainly, if you were my chairman for my club, Worthing, we would be ripping the, you know what, out of you for a long time.
It's deserved.
That leads me, you know, the first time you and your dad sat in front of the committee and supporters and whatever, it was a difficult evening that evening. If my memory serves me correctly, out from what I read in the book.
And there wasn't
vitriolic, but it was a typical, here he comes, here they come, what are they going to do? And have those stalwarts, shall we say, who were in the clubhouse that night, who gave you perhaps a little bit of a tough time on your opening night, have they warmed to you? Has the ice melted?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a part of the book that's about the first time we were kind of unveiled to the fans. And I think it's worth saying that actually, like, everyone has always been incredibly supportive at the club, really, from day one. But yeah, you definitely have that thing where, like, I certainly felt it, whether it's in my head or not, I don't know. But like, there's a moment where you've got to kind of convince people who've been at the club for a long time that your intentions are good, right? And I think particularly, like, going back into, I think that is in the book, and I think that, like, plays on my mind quite a lot, is like, I maybe don't look like your stereotypical kind of football chairman. I don't necessarily sound like I'm from the area as well, because work moves me around and all that kind of stuff. I don't have a history in the game either. Like, so I think that there was a night of really trying to put my best foot forward and show, you know, I've got the best intentions with this club, and you know, I know what I'm doing. And I think, like, the big journey for me is kind of admitting that, like, I don't think anyone who runs a club totally knows absolutely everything they're doing, because so much of the job is you're not in control, right? Or ultimately, you're just a supporter, and your job is just to kind of support the manager, support all the different teams. Like, where if you spot a thing where there's a breakdown in communication, try and link stuff back together. But really, that's all you can do.
So those people who give you a hard time no longer give you a hard time?
No, I think they're very, very. No, I think they're kind. I think that you it's football, right? So sometimes you get what I would call robust feedback.
Yeah.
There's definitely a thing that I've fallen into, which is weird because I don't do this in my day job. So I don't necessarily take reviews too seriously or like end up on social media kind of reading people's thoughts. But I think like a thing that the book explores is actually in real life, everyone was very, very supportive. But you can read a tweet that and you can get really panicked by that. You can get really worried, and that stuff can drive you mad. But no, it's been a real, you know, it's again like a big message of the book is that lots of non-league football clubs are kind of very dysfunctional families, right? And they're kind of held together by love, but also they're dysfunctional families. So sometimes everyone wants to, you know, tear each other's hair out and stuff because the thing that you want more than anything is the thing that you can't control. And there's a really good book called, I forgot what the book's called now, but he goes to different clubs and he meets the chairman of Tranmere Rovers. And it's about 5 years ago, this 10 years ago. And he kind of said, it's a business that's totally like, unlike any other business in that you can't control the thing that your stakeholders or your customers or, you know, if you look at it like a normal business, you can't actually control the thing they want. Whereas like in any other business, the person who's running the business would have a control, you know, would be able to like have some kind of safeguard over like what the product is. Whereas football, it's just nothing like that at all, right? No. Like it's everyone's in it together and you kind of just, you just get bashed about by, you know, circumstance and whatever happens.
So when When is the book launched and where will it be available from?
So the book is like officially out to purchase at Waterstones and, you know, your local bookseller from the 10th of August. And you can get it online as well on the Penguin website and on Amazon and, or, you know, just wherever you buy books. And we're also doing, really excited about this. I'm flying back to the UK tonight and we're doing a launch event at the club this Tuesday. So Wednesday. So, you know, we'll have everyone from the club there, but also kind of hopefully people who like my work from outside of football and other people who like non-league. And we'll have a really nice night kind of celebrating football, celebrating the book and having a laugh at my expense.
Very good.
No, Jonathan, it's been very, very good read. I have to say, if you listen to this podcast and you're thinking of a read for your summer holidays, do purchase it because it's fantastic. Yeah. If you love non-league like we do, it really does tell a tale that you can relate so often to your own club and the stories and characters you see around the club. So good luck with it. Thank you for taking your time to join us here on the Premier Non-League Podcast Summer Special. We will keep an eye out for Ashton this season. Chris, maybe looking from above, you're looking down for the first time in a while, you can say that. But maybe you'll be joined by Ashton next season and we wish you all the best.
Hopefully. Yeah, they're good folk. Yeah, good folk, good club. Yeah, it'll be good.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, all the best to you guys for the upcoming season, and thanks for your time. It's been really nice chatting.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank good you. Luck. Have a safe flight tonight, and go buy the book. Yeah. We'll be back on the 11th of August. The podcast was recording on the 7th. Don't listen to Trevor because he got the date wrong on our Twitter, which is now apparently being rebranded as X. I've just got news. Elon Musk is playing around and playing silly buggers, so follow us on X, as it's now called, at the PNLP. We'll be back with our first season episode on the 11th of August. But until then, stay safe, and me and Chris will be seeing you.
Bye for now.
Search the Premier Non-League Podcast on all platforms.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.